Hello and good evening. You're listening to The Fourth Estate, the show where journalists talk journalism. Coming to you from 2SER in Sydney on Gadigal lands of the Eora Nation, right across Australia on your community radio network, and directly to your device across the globe via podcast. My name is Evie Maguire, and I am bringing you a jam-packed, younger show tonight. Now, that is no offence to my co-host Peter Frey, who is as amazing as a host as he is a mentor. There's nothing old about you, Peter, I promise. I just wanted to spruce things up a little bit tonight. Now, on tonight's show, myself and a panel of young journalists are going to talk about what it's really like being a young journo in this ever-changing, if not sometimes disheartening, media landscape. How do we maintain hope? Why are we pursuing a career when you can please our parents and study law or business instead? And what do we think of those job cuts that we are always reading about? So along with all this, we will have time to chat about entry-level quizzes, career changes, and advice we would give to aspiring young journalists like ourselves. Helping me dissect this fractured media world we are living in are in the studio Kiralee Schwartz, journalism law graduate at Deakin University in Melbourne and a Young Walkley Award winner, I am told.
Something like that.
And now a reporter at News Corp. Welcome, Kiralee.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
So we also have Kate Ullman, another journalism law graduate, but this time from UNSW and now a multimedia editor at the Law Society of New South Wales. Hi, Kate.
Hi, how are you going?
Good. And on the line from Lyon in France, I'm not kidding, I am delighted to welcome Jason Fallow, UTS journalism graduate and former journalist at Channel 7 and 2GB. And now I'm told you're working at a, quote, press office of an international organisation. Bonjour, Jason.
Bonjour, bonsoir, Evie, how are you?
Good, I'm so excited, so let's get cracking. As a young journo myself, I get a lot of my news from Twitter these days. One post really caught my eye this week and I had to include it in the Fourth Estate. And that was a post by editor of the South Australian Riverland paper, The Murray Pioneer, Paul Mitchell. Now, in his tweet, Paul linked to the paper's recent recruitment process where six young journalists had to fill out a basic knowledge test. And Paul found out that out of 23 questions answered, the six candidates were completely clueless, quote, and unable to answer the series of basic politics, current affairs, and general knowledge questions. Now, these questions included things like, who is Australia's treasurer? What does the NBN stand for? And which party does Donald Trump represent? Apparently, only two of the six candidates knew the name of the federal opposition leader, while one actually confused him with the current prime minister and spelled his name wrong. I think just give up there. Anyway, Paul's tweet has caused a lot of buzz around the Twitter sphere and has been picked up by other news outlets such as news.com. Paul told news.com.au that it was a combination of the quality of university courses and the reliance on social media for news that caused the abysmal responses. Now, I have to start with you, Kiralee, not because you work for News Corp, but because I know that you would have something very interesting to say about this. Do you think it is serious or fair for Paul to be ridiculing these candidates?
I don't necessarily think he needs to be ridiculing them, but I think it is a serious point, especially because the Murray Pioneer is a regional paper. So I think some of the other questions in that quiz focused on, you know, geographical issues and political issues, like which seat is the paper actually in. And I think things like that are really important, especially at a regional where you're going to be writing about everything. You're going to cover sport and politics and, you know, business and local affairs. And I think a solid general knowledge basis is probably reasonable to expect. But I don't know, in terms of knowing things like, you know, about Donald Trump or about Malcolm Turnbull, which was spelt Malcolm Turnbull, I think, in the quote. I think things like that are really important, and it is hard when you're just seeing social media because everything you see is just shared from your mates and they might not necessarily be interested in, you know, the treasurer's Scott Morrison or whatever. You're probably not going to expose yourself to things like that. So I think that his point was probably a bit exaggerated, but I do think that it was a fair one to make.
Well, did you take the test?
I did, actually.
How did you go?
When I was preparing. I did pretty well. I think a couple of the geographical ones I wasn't quite so good on about, you know, the which electorate they sat in. But I think the other ones I was relatively covered. Got the Melbourne Cup, you know.
Well, Jason, I'd like to bring you in here. What do you think this says about the interests of young journalists and their general knowledge?
Well, yeah, it is. It's frightening, isn't it, how little some of these young journos seem to know. And I mean, our job is to tell people what's happening and explain why. And that's very hard to do when you don't know the context of events. And, you know, journalism is like increasingly being cited as one of the least trustworthy professions in the country. So little mistakes like those, you really need to avoid because, you know, you lose a reader, a listener, a viewer these days. It's very, very hard to get them back. So like, obviously you can't be expected to be an expert in everything, but, you know, try and know a little about a lot. That's my rule. You know, you don't have to know what Iran's GDP is, but you should know that the president is Hassan Rouhani. You don't have to know the Namibian ambassador to the UN, but you should know who the secretary general is, Antonio Guterres, for those playing at home.
My mum actually calls it being a specialist generalist. She's like, you kind of specialise in knowing not much about a lot of things.
Yeah.
Well, like, one of the questions was about Meghan Markle. And I was like, you have to be living under a rock to not know that she married Prince Harry. Come on.
Or how to spell her name.
Yeah, right. Like, it's sort of like saying, I want to be a cook and making a dish and then going to get pepper instead of olive oil. Like, yeah. I feel like this is sort of really, it's really, really necessary. So, Kate, what do you think about all this? And do you think the universities are to blame?
I'm going to say, I think it is very important to know a little about a lot of things, like my fellow journalists here have said. But I remember when I was at university, I didn't really know that much. I probably would have failed the test too. I don't know. I know where to find information, and I think that's important for journalists. But you don't really know or pay attention so much to the news until you start working in it, and then you become a news junkie. And I think it's very kind of easy for us to all judge these young university students, but really, do you know where Ned Kelly had his last stand? That was one of the questions. I don't know.
I definitely didn't know that.
I didn't know that.
I've been there.
The only reason I might know it is if I'd seen the movie, but I mean, yeah, knowing who our treasurer is, or, you know, what party Donald Trump belongs to, maybe that's a little more important. But I mean, just because they don't know it off the top of their head doesn't mean they couldn't find it.
I'd definitely have to agree with that.
I got to say, like, we, you know, that's our job. We find information. We're curious about things.
But how do people trust us if we don't know the information that we're reporting on?
I think they also trust our process. So, like, in terms of being able to actually go out and do interviews and get, you know, facts firsthand, and then to have them checked and, you know, in the editing process, I think that that's just as important as knowing things off the top.
I would never write a story saying that's that because I know it is. I would quote a source and I would say where I'd got the information. So either way, you're going to have to look for other sources to back up what you think. So, yeah, maybe it's a good thing. Maybe it is instilling curiosity and teaching them to go looking for answers when they don't have them.
So essentially, are you saying that you came out of university and you were almost, as Paul said, comically underprepared?
I wasn't comically underprepared. I mean, I'd done a double degree in journalism and law. If you can get through that, I think you know a few things.
At least one or two.
So, no, like, I would have maybe done better than the outcomes that seem to have come from this test. But I definitely wasn't what you'd call a news junkie, like I am now. I wasn't reading the news daily. I maybe watched a bit of news. I mean, my first year in university, I was at college because I'm from a country town. So we didn't even have a TV. We didn't have radios or anything. The only news you'd get was really mostly social media. So I look back at that and I definitely, at that stage, was comically underprepared. But the more you start working in it and writing in at university, the more you start surrounding yourself in more news. But I do think journalists, we consider ourselves news junkies and whatever, but the average person, sure, they're not consuming the wide range of news that we are. Definitely not.
No, and it's probably more topics-based. Like, they've got their topic of interest and they read articles about that, but not everything else.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Jace, what do you think over there? I mean, do you think that the universities are to blame?
Well, I don't necessarily think it's the place of universities to teach us general knowledge. But as Kiralee and Kate were saying, instilling that sense of curiosity is a really important thing. And, you know, having inspiring teachers is something that really got me to be curious about what's going on
definitely
around me, hearing their stories about, you know, where they'd been, what they've done. That was what really got me curious. But I'd also say that in terms of the being comically unprepared thing, I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing to not know what you're doing. I mean, if I go and do an interview and I don't learn anything new, or if I, you know, go on a new type of story and I haven't learned anything from it, I think that's a bit of a fail. I think part of the fun of journalism is being able to learn something literally new every day.
100%.
Yep, definitely. Yeah,
definitely. Well, my final question to you, Kiralee, did you ever have to take a quiz like this in your process of becoming a journo, or had you had an experience sort of like this one?
Here we go. What did you get? What did I get? I had to do a few. So in a couple of my uni classes, we would have a weekly general knowledge test. Mm. So it would be, I don't know, usually 10 questions about, you know, current affairs of the week, and then we'd sort of discuss them afterwards and how they'd been covered. So it was definitely in my interests to study up because, you know, I wanted to get good marks at uni. But I actually also, after I finished uni, applied for a grad job with a major sort of news agency, and I had to sit a general knowledge test for them, which was quite intimidating because it was sort of not just Australia, but general, like global sort of news. So I did study up for a bit in terms of, you know, just reading the news in the weeks leading up to it. But even then, I don't think, you know, most of the things I was fairly well across anyway, just from my own sort of reading and research.
I mean, I have to be honest, I remember a couple of years ago when they had the Sydney Morning Herald cadetships, and I remember that they had you had to do a test for that. And I didn't even get through the first round, so I didn't have to do it. But I remember being really worried about that test because you sort of get into a mindset of only reading what you're interested in. And, mm-hmm. yeah, I had no idea about politics at that stage.
Yeah, same.
It's interesting. Maybe, yeah, I feel like we should give these candidates the benefit of the doubt a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, Kirillia and I were pretty lucky. We were in a cohort that didn't have cadetships for most of the news outlets. So when we graduated, there was no test.
It was all just make your own luck. Be in the right place at the right time and stick your hand up. And
here's your 50 grand Hextech.
Yep.
Off you go.
Good luck with that.
You're listening to The Fourth Estate, where journalists talk about journalism. I'm Evie Maguire, and joining me this week are Kiralee Schwartz from News Corp, Kate Orman from the New South Wales Law Society, and Jason Fallow from an ambiguous organisation that he cannot name, but somewhere in Lyon, France. Don't worry, if we chat to him enough, he may tell us an answer. Look, we have heard it all before, but I'm going to say it again. More and more journalists are losing their jobs to the current media landscape. The more it happens, the more it gets talked about, but I really want to actually get the opinion from you guys, especially because we're just getting started in this industry and we only get told that there's not enough job security. So in June this year, it was announced that the AAP was going to cut 25 positions. Most of those who work in the news and data areas were going to get made redundant. Just a month before that, ABC announced that we'll see 20 journalists and producers lose their jobs to make room for a new digital strategy, which will address several flaws in its publishing processes. And we also can't forget what happened last year when Fairfax Media cut 125 editorial jobs, which was 25% of the entire editorial staff. And that obviously prompted a 7-day strike. Now, as dire as this all seems, we have three journalists here, four including Jason, who are just getting started. So I must ask the question, the scary question to you first, Kate, why are you a journalist? And hearing about these job cuts, does it make you anxious?
Yes, in a word. I remember when I was at university in our very first week, probably our very first lecture for journalism, one of the lecturers, who is a very prominent journalist, said to us all, she said, raise your hand if you want to be a journalist. And most of the room raised their hand. And she said, right, 75% of you put your hands down. Those people who still have their hands up, about that many will probably get a job. And we all kind of said, oh my God. She said, everyone else consider changing degrees because it's a tough gig.
That's pretty harsh.
And it was so frightening. And if you're asking me if that gave me anxiety, yes, it gave me anxiety. And it gave a lot of us anxiety. A lot of my friends actually quit and went to PR at the very first
week.
Seems
to be a common trend.
But like it's definitely, it seems like there's more of a logical career progression. And I think with all the changes that is happening in journalism, for example, when Kiralee and I graduated, there was no cadetships offered at any of the major outlets. So Fairfax, ABC, News Corp all stopped offering cadetships. So there was no kind of graduate position in our industry. We sort of just had to go and make our own way. And that involved doing internships, unpaid internships, a lot of free work, kind of just hassling anyone to give us a bit of work. And then obviously when you did get a job, it was paid a lot less than other industries, which is frightening because for me, you know, I moved to Sydney to go to uni and I was paying rent and I was trying to kind of earn enough money to live in Sydney, but also I couldn't work for free. So I had to have a job at the gym or at Macca's or something to keep myself afloat. So they expect a lot from young journalists, but I say there's definitely opportunities there if you can put in the hard yards. And if you love it, you're going to do it. And I loved it. And I, you know, had a law degree as well. And I could have gone and sat in an office and been a little cog in the corporate machine, but I didn't want to. And if you really like it, you'll find a way. And I got to say, now they are offering cadetships and there are a lot of alternative media outlets. Like if you think of Pedestrian, Vox, Junkie, all those new kind of young digital publishing agencies, they didn't really exist when I studied journalism. So there's a whole lot of new jobs being created, just in different areas, and perhaps not the traditional editorial positions that might have involved processes like sub-editing and multiple proofing processes that I think are maybe becoming a bit redundant in the 24-hour news cycle that is all online and all very rapid. And I think that that's probably where the jobs are being cut.
Kiralee, to you, I mean, did you ever worry that you might lose your job?
I haven't worried that I would lose my job, but that said, I've been a journalist for 4.5 years and I've had probably 4.5 jobs. So I've had all different ones. I agree with Kate that you have to get out and hustle. You have to make your own luck. Like I was sort of the same. I was from a small country town. I studied in Melbourne and I moved up to Sydney with like my last $1,500. And I was lucky I had a 2-month internship at Channel 9. Which was unpaid, but I was fortunate that on the last Friday that I was there, the deputy news director of Nine News looked at me and she said, "Are we paying you yet?" And I said to her, "Well, no, actually, my internship finishes on Friday." She's like, "Come back on Monday, we'll pay you, it's fine." And I was like, "Oh, okay."
Oh, thank goodness.
So you sort of have to take a risk and be willing to put yourself out there a bit, I think. And then in terms of losing a job, I mean, I started off doing, I did a 6-month freelance, like sort of deal. I was a full-time freelance and then I had a 12-month contract and then I moved to a different company and then I was on a contract for 7 months and then I got offered a full-time job and I think that you just have to seize opportunities as they come and be prepared to think broadly as well. Mm. Like my current job, I currently work as a commercial content editor, which like Kate said, that's a job that didn't exist 2 years ago. Mm. And I love it and I enjoy it and I get to do all the favourite things I love about journalism. I get to go out and meet people and interview really interesting, you know, people for stories. I get to, you know, come up with original story ideas every day. It's all the bits that I really love. It's just packaged in a slightly different box to what I perhaps anticipated when I first stepped out of university.
Mm. Well, speaking about seizing opportunities, Jason, you moved to another country. So, like, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, yeah, I totally agree with everything that Kiralee is saying. If you love it, you will find a way to find a job. And new opportunities are always emerging. I mean, yeah, jobs are being created every day, almost as fast as they're being hopefully faster in the future. But, yeah, and the world's always going to need good storytellers, let's be honest. You know, we're always going to need people who can explain to us complex issues in a way that we understand. And that's what journalism is, basically. So definitely hustle, make your own luck, be prepared to take a risk, be prepared to uproot your life and move to the other side of the world because it could pay off.
Well, according to an article by The Guardian, in 2013 it was estimated that more than 3,000 Australian journalists had lost their jobs in the past 5 years prior to that, and that was in 2013. So it's places like News Corp now that have completely restructured their operations, with most of their photographers now being made redundant, unfortunately. I guess my question to you, Kiralee, you surely hear about this all the time, but do you feel safer working at News Corp as opposed to Fairfax?
That's a really tough question. I don't really know how to answer that except to say that I'm really happy working at News Corp.
Yeah. Right answer.
Correct answer. Bosses, did you hear that?
I mean, I think all big media companies at the moment are really rethinking their business strategies. I mean, it's really important to stay current, and so much has changed over the last couple of years. You know, we've had social media and we've had all kinds of other interesting things, you know, like a lot of platforms having digital publications now that they mightn't have had in the future. And there's such different styles and different, you know, business models, different operating costs, all of those things that big businesses have to factor in. So I think it's definitely a universal problem for big publishers at the moment. And it's something that I think everyone's just trying to do their best and try and see what works for them. It's very much evolving, and I guess in 5 years, like, I mean, who knows what it's going to look like.
Mm. Yeah. And maybe that's why the smaller publishers are doing so well, because they're finding that niche and they're a little more agile and they're a little more easier to downscale and change it up and do different things. Whereas a big organization like News Corp or Fairfax, where everyone has their little jobs throughout the network, is maybe a lot harder to change and adapt. So, yeah.
You're a multimedia journalist now. It's not necessarily like the traditional journalist role, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, is that what the future will look like for more journalists?
Yeah, I definitely think it's about being able to do everything. So most of the jobs that I think are being cut from traditional news organisations are those jobs that are literally the sub who writes the headline, or although Daily Telly basically makes money off those headlines, but, you know, the ones where the editor does one little job and they don't do anything else. That's, everything's becoming quicker and easier, and with technology, those kinds of things are becoming less necessary. So where it used to be a full-time job, it's part of everyone else's job, and everyone has to do subbing and everyone has to do everything. But also, when you're publishing a story now, when you're writing, you're thinking about the multimedia content. So you're thinking, how is this going to display on social media? What images do I need? How can I make this better in terms of, can I create some video content? People consume stories over multiple platforms now. So yeah, I think multimedia journalism is definitely emerging. I mean, I know that we studied multi-platform journalism at university, and that was one of the subjects that I really enjoyed. But I think it's a really good sort of tool to have. If you can do it all, you're really employable. So that's definitely my advice for young journalists. Mm.
And even once you've got your first job, like I actually did a course about 3 weeks ago in Premiere Pro, which I never thought I would do. You know, I've always thought of myself as being a writer first, but I've actually like edited a few little projects here and there, and I've actually loved it. So I, you know, did a proper course at Afters a few weeks ago, and it was fantastic. So I'm hoping to use that moving forward.
Yeah, and how much more employable does that make you in a digital world?
Like, well, fingers crossed. I have to practice first. It's like, it's a really hectic program. There's so many, like, I think literally the sky's the limit with that program, so I'm definitely going to need a bit of practice. But I think that's the whole thing. You just have to upskill as much as you can and just make yourself as useful as possible to the organization you're working for.
My producer made a really interesting note. He said these job cuts that you just spoke about, it's kind of like looking at a block of Swiss cheese. Like, it looks great on the outside, but there are obvious holes in it. Jason, over to you. I mean, what do you think about these job cuts? Do you think that they're severely hurting the quality of journalism?
Well, yes and no. I mean, at some of the more old school media organisations, your Fairfaxes, your News Corps, your Channel 7s, yes, because they're, from the way I see it, they're still trying to work in the old way, but with less. And unfortunately, that just doesn't work. But as Clayton Curley was saying, all these new and emerging outlets, the smaller, more agile ones, are definitely producing great quality stuff with, you know, much fewer resources. So I think, you know, there's still hope. And as the girl said, you've just got to upskill, make sure you're across all the new changes, and, you know, don't plump for the lowest common denominator, I think, either. You know, I think people still really want to hear
and think outside
quality, important stories.
Yeah. Mm. And I'd say think outside the box too. Like, I was just thinking about Kate, like, because you work for a trade publication, which is something different. I mean, because a lot of people graduate and you think mass media straight away.
Yeah.
What made you sort of wanted to do
that? Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right, Kirli. So you think when you're at university that you can only work for ABC, Channel 7, Channel 9, Channel 10, or Fairfax News Corp, basically. And when there's actually so many more opportunities out there that maybe aren't advertised or maybe you didn't think of. So I work for the Law Society of New South Wales, and we basically produce a magazine, and we have we're working on like an online version of that magazine, but at the moment it's a monthly magazine, and we have social media content that I produce as well. So I read this in a Vox article this week that you sent to me, Evie, but one of the tips for young journalists was don't trade opportunity for prestige. And I think that's really pertinent in the modern media world, because you think that when you graduate, you're going to get a job and you hope you'll get a job at one of the big names. But really, there's so many jobs out there in smaller publications or working for companies in sort of content creation roles where you're going to get a lot more experience. So what I do is I work at the Law Society of New South Wales, and we present a magazine every month called LSJ. And that's a member magazine. So if you think of members of NRMA get a magazine every month, members of the Law Society, so lawyers in New South Wales, get this magazine every month. And we also create multimedia content in terms of podcasts and videos for our social media and stuff. So I'm in a very small team. Like, there's me and three other journalists. And we all get to kind of do a whole lot of creative things that I don't think you would have the opportunity to do if you were just a small, like, you know, writer in the reporting on, I don't know, whatever your round would be at Fairfax. Instead, I'm going to prison, videoing dogs in a prison project, then I'm making a podcast that afternoon, then I'm interviewing a former High Court judge or, you know, some celebrity chef who also has a law degree for a written story and taking photos for that. And so I get all this experience on a whole range of platforms that, although I don't work for a big news outlet, I think the actual work I'm doing is perhaps more stimulating and fun.
So I guess with the job cuts then, do you think that the worst is over?
I think so, yeah. I actually do. I think maybe that finally most of the news organisations seem to have got their head around the fact that they need to change and adapt. And yeah, I think so. There'll always be changes, but I think now that the big companies realise that they need to be a little more agile and ahead of the game in terms of where media is going.
Yeah. I think it'll also be as audiences evolve a little bit. Like, everyone went a little bit crazy when Facebook and Twitter and all that came along. Yeah. And everyone's like, oh, this is all I need in my life now. Like, this is where I spend all of my time. And I think especially in light of recent developments, particularly in the US, people are starting to realise that perhaps actually maybe you do need media that's fact-checked, you know, because
100%.
It's hard to trust what's on your social medias. You don't know if it's true. You don't know if it's from, you know, a crazy fan page or a really, you know, particular political group or something. You don't know if it's fair and balanced and accurate. So I think actually audiences are maturing to go back to larger news outlets just because there's sort of more brands that they can trust.
I think there's a real craving for good quality reporting in terms of on your feeds. There's so much dog videos and other kind of crap online that through the noise you can really discern a great story. And I look at outlets like The Guardian or The New York Times that do just excellent reporting, and I think there's a real craving for that, and people are going to read that, and there'll always be jobs for journalists who can do that really high quality stuff, because everything else in the end can be manipulated by computers and AI and whatever, but computers can't tell a great story like that. They can't do the hashtag Me Too story that is going to go most viral.
Jace, what about you over there? What do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree. And the Me Too example is a really, really good one now that I think of it. You know, that's just something that you can't replicate without good storytellers, you know what I mean? And without really digging into the issue. And it's a really great example of how people still have an appetite for important stories, for you know, they want to get into the issues that really affect their everyday lives. And I think that's a really great example of why we should maintain hope.
But if there is this hunger for quality news, I guess, why are these companies still cutting journalists?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. But I guess there's always going to be an ebb and flow. And, you know, maybe in 5 years, they'll start hiring hundreds more. I guess the appetites of the audiences are changing at a faster pace than the media organisations can keep up with. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So once the news organisations stop chasing their tail, we can get back into the hardcore storytelling.
Your you're listening to The Fourth Estate, where journalists talk about journalism. I'm Evie Maguire, and joining me this week are Killary Schwartz from News Corp, Kate Allman from the New South Wales Law Society, and Jason Fellow from the press office of an international organisation which shall not be named, but I am working on it, don't worry. So, in an article written by the ABC, a former Toowoomba journalist, Nancy Webb, has decided to ditch journalism and become a nun. Miss Webb plans on unplugging herself from the daily news cycle, social media technology, and life as we know it, and embark on what she sees as a calling from God. Now, I don't think there could be a bigger career change. I was also shocked to find out that it takes 8 years to become a nun.
Incredible.
I struggled studying journalism for 3. So I want to start with you, Jace, again, because you did kind of do a similar thing in terms of a drastic change. You didn't become a nun, but you did have to do a drastic change in moving countries. I mean, do you think Nancy's career change is a reflection on the current journalism industry?
Well, I think Nancy's got a great story. I think she should write a book.
I think she definitely should write a book.
Totally. But I didn't become a nun, but you could say I went to the dark side by going into the sort of PR press officer type situation rather than journalism. But, you know, I think these days there's nothing wrong with a career change. Mm. I mean, if journalism's what you love, stick with it. But you know, if you're not feeling it, there's nothing wrong with getting out and trying something new. That's one of the great things about working these days, is that there's no stigma attached to changing professions, and it can actually be a really good thing.
In the article, Nancy said that she finds the parallels between news reporting and becoming a nun, saying, quote, "It's all about sharing the news." Kiralee, what do you think?
That's probably a different style of news, but but I don't know.
Would you ever consider a massive career change?
Becoming a nun? Well, I mean, I don't know if the convent is for me, but I think like what she's doing is amazing. And I have to say, I mean, it's sort of one of the perks of growing up millennial, isn't it? That the sky's your oyster and you're told through your whole life that if you work hard, you can do whatever you want. You know, we're probably the first generation that's really been told that and had it be true, you know, because anything's possible. It's like Kate was saying before, you know, I mean, I have a law degree too. I could have been a lawyer. That still is a possibility. I don't know. Or, you know, I might go and move to Bali and rent out kayaks or something. I mean, you know, you never know where life's going to take you. And I guess for her, you know, it's probably an unexpected direction, but I certainly wish her all the best.
Well, God can't sack you. I mean, why not?
That's true.
Gives everything. It's perfect.
I mean, both of you combined your degrees, so you have a journalism and law degree. Do you think that it's more common to do that and it almost gives you more of a safe net?
Yeah, I think so. And it's funny, that Vox article that I was talking about before mentioned in its tips,
don't be a lawyer.
Don't do a law degree.
Whatever you do.
I don't know. I think that was an American article, because I hear that the law degrees there are like hundreds of thousands of dollars and you will be paying it off for the rest of your life. But I got to say, and I think Kiralee agrees with me, doing the added degree, and especially a law degree, has been my ticket into a lot of opportunities that I wouldn't otherwise had. It sets you apart. It's a big highlight on your resume that says this person can think laterally, they've got drive, they're disciplined enough to complete 2 degrees in 5 years.
They can focus on facts and decide what's really important and just synthesize a huge amount of information into something that's actually comprehensible.
You can do that without a law degree though, right?
You can, but I think that I sort of agree with Kate. Probably for me, the best thing I got out of that was just the way I approach problems, the way I attack problems is really based on that whole the structure and style that I learned in my law degree, and I found it extremely valuable as a journalist.
And I think also, and in terms of even just reporting, also what Kiralee said is 100% correct. Like, finding information is so much quicker and easier once you've done a law degree. It's hard to explain, but your brain changes.
It does.
But also just in reporting politics and court cases and police news, if you've done a law degree, you actually understand what it is that's going on and you're careful to get things right.
And understand why you don't need to allegedly say that allegedly this happened allegedly here on that day, you know, allegedly.
There's a lot of journalists out there that are reporting things incorrectly, especially court cases, and I can't help but think, oh, some lawyer's reading that and very irritated. It's
tearing their hair out.
And I'm reading it irritated, so there's a lot of other people that probably are, and I just think, you know, so much of our news is related to law. Politics is lawmaking.
Mm. And most politicians are many politicians are lawyers as well.
Many of them are lawyers. If you can match them when you're interviewing them, then I think that gives you a huge edge.
Well, Jason, what about you? I mean, you didn't study a combined law degree. Do you think you needed to combine your degree with law?
Yeah, so I studied international studies, which gave me the opportunity to learn another language. I learned French. And so it wasn't law, but it definitely did widen my perspective on things in terms of seeing things from a more international perspective and you know, understanding other cultures and other people's languages, which gives you a new perspective on things. So it wasn't law, but law would have been very helpful, I'm sure.
Oh, so is international relations,
I'm definitely. exactly. And these days, the world's so interconnected. So it's really important to have that sort of wider perspective. So I would say definitely if someone's out there thinking about they want to be a journalist, but they'd also they're interested in law or they're interested in economics or whatever, combine your degree. I think there is nothing but a positive that could come out of it.
I have to agree with that, because I think also when I studied journalism at my university, most of the subjects were very process oriented. So it was like, here's how you put a TV bulletin together. Here's how you produce a radio segment. Here's how you write a feature. Here's how you whatever. It was all very much how to. And I think it was nice to colour it in with something that I have a bit of, I guess, specialist knowledge in. And it's probably, I mean, exactly the same with international studies, because now you know more than the average person about, you know, the UN and international relations, and maybe have a particular interest in trade or something, you know, or geography or something. But I think it's just nice to colour it in with a specialty.
Mm, definitely.
I want to go full circle and chat quickly about where we started off. So we're all from different universities around Australia and have all studied different journalism degrees of sorts. How important were your degrees to your studies in what you're doing right now, Kate?
Very important. You know, just on a practical level, every employer that I've been to has looked at my resume and said, great, you've got a journalism degree. So yeah, you need a degree.
So my experience is probably a little bit different. I would say the most valuable thing that I got out of university was a network, or the start of a network, because I came from a very small town, so like 1,500 people in Western Victoria, more sheep than people, like that kind of place, you know, peak hour if there's, you know, five other cars on the road at the same time.
Or five other sheep.
Or five other sheep, exactly. So for me, I came into, I guess, the journalism world not knowing a soul. I didn't know any journalists. I didn't know any editors. I didn't know anyone. And I got really lucky in that in my final year of uni, well, actually, probably my last 2 years, I had two amazing lecturers in journalism, both of whom were former BBC editors. You know, one was, I think, a foreign editor, and one had worked, used to produce like the 6 p.m. news or something. Anyway, both former BBC editors. And they were really encouraging and really inspiring, but also they were aware of opportunities that I had never even heard of, and that if I'd been scrolling through Seek or something, I might not have found. Like, for example, one of my lecturers recommended me for an award right after I finished uni, which I was very fortunate to have won. And then so that's what led me to Sydney. It gave me an 8-week internship at Channel 9. That led to my first job. And then from there, every job I've had since has been through a network of people I've known. And so it sort of all was kicked off with that first person who sort of had a bit of faith in me at uni, which, I mean, I wouldn't have met her had I, like, those two lecturers had I not been to the university I went to. So I think that was really important.
Well, on networking, Jason, I assume that you did a lot of internships throughout your degree. Was it the internships that you learnt the most from, or was it the degree itself?
That's a really interesting question. I mean, definitely on the internships, I learnt a lot. But those doors were only opened because I was studying journalism, you know, because my lecturer had said, oh, there's an internship going here at 2UE was my first internship, which unfortunately doesn't exist at radio station anymore, but that's where I cut my teeth. I learned so much there, but I would not have been able to get there with it were it not for the degree, and I wouldn't have been able to, you know, give them some added value, I guess, if I wasn't studying, if I didn't have a basic understanding of how journalism works, how to write a story. So I think it really is a balance. I wouldn't say just do one or the other. I think you really, if you want to be a journo, study, but also take advantage of all the internship opportunities you can.
Mm. I'd love to end the show on a really light, positive, enthusiastic note to all those other young journalists out there who do want to pursue this career. So I guess to all of you, I'll start off with you, Kiralee, first. How do you maintain hope as a young journo?
How do I maintain hope?
What keeps you going?
She doesn't. She goes herself to sleep with a packet of Oreos and Netflix.
Just stress eating.
No hope all the time. No, I don't know. I actually love my job. I'm excited to see how the industry develops in coming years. I really enjoy learning new things, like you know, upskilling, doing new courses where I can, interviewing new people, and just making connections with them, and also like within the company and the industry as well. I think I don't know. I sort of enjoy all those aspects, and I feel really good about those moving forward. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen.
I think one of the great things in journalism is we are all really great, interesting, curious people. So journalists are very happy to meet other people, and there's a lot of networking events you can attend, and that always fills me with hope and confidence about our industry, because we're really supportive of each other in terms of there's a lot of job cuts going on, but there's always people at these events that I go to that are like, hey, I've heard of an opportunity here, or I need freelancers. What do you know? Who do you know? It's a lot about who you know. So I think if a young journalist, my one bit of advice would be, you know, get off the couch, go to the industry event, follow the MEAA, follow the Walkley Foundation, join the things, pay the $10, like have the free drinks and whatever, but just get out there and meet people, because most of your jobs will come from your network. And it also just inspires me and goes to show, like, yes, there's hope for us all.
Definitely. I always feel really encouraged after I go to things like that. And also I mean, a lot of, you know, people at those events are, you know, young journos, but you also occasionally meet someone that you've really looked up to for a long time, which is really cool.
I've met some of like the most inspiring mentors at those events, and we've maintained connections, like, you know, far more senior journalists. They're always willing to sort of lend a hand and take you for a coffee and introduce you to some editor that you really would love to meet, and I'm just so continually impressed by how much time they'll lend to young journos. So go for
it. Well, even you two met at a Walkley event.
We
it's
did
all about
yeah we
did
I met at a Walkley event with Kira Lee, who was an editor who needed a freelancer, and I did some freelance work for her.
Well, and actually we freelanced for each other over the past 12 months.
Scratch my back, I scratch yours.
Jason, do you have any final words of wisdom over there in France?
I don't know about words of wisdom, but in terms of maintaining hope, I think that the most important thing to keep in mind is that, you know, if you want to become a journalist, you can do it, and you can make change in the world. It is really a very empowering profession. Even though, yes, there are changes, there's always going to be changes, there'll always be job cuts, there'll always be, you know, new challenges, but you can make change, and yeah, you can make it, you can make a real change.
Well, we couldn't have ended on more of a positive note. So that's it from us on The Fourth Estate this week. Thanks to my guests Kira Lee Schwartz, Kate Ullman, and Jason Fallow in Lyon in France. Next week, Peter Frey will be back in the host seat. Make sure you're subscribed to Fourth Estate on your favourite podcast app so you can hear us talk media, politics, and a few things in between. We'll be back with more next week, but in the meantime, you can stay in touch with us on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle is Fourth Estate AU. My name's Evie Maguire. Thank you for listening.